Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 196. How many names do you have? Not 196. And there's still more than 800 to go. And these are just a few sample names from the unlimited names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we call him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purna Purushottam Bhagavan Parameshvara. Actually, many of these names, they are elaborations or nuances on the six most prominent qualities of Bhagavan. Aishvaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagya yostra shannang bhaga itingena. The six most prominent qualities are Aishvarya, opulence. Of course, all the qualities are opulences, but specifically in the sense of wealth. Aishvaryasya samagrasya, all opulences within him. Virya, in the sense of power. Yasha, kirti, fame. Shriya, beauty. Jnana, knowledge. And vairagya, renunciation, or more literally, detachment, non-attachment. So, name 196 is Hiranyanabha, which literally means gold navel. From the navel of Bhagavan comes a lotus in which is born Hiranyagarbha, Brahma. The lotus is said to be, is described as being golden. So this name is very important for us here in this material world. The first conception of the personality of Godhead for conditioned souls is in relation to the creation. And in the Christian religion, for instance, Bhagavan is, of course they don't use the word Bhagavan, but he's conceived of mostly in relation to the creation. And they don't have any idea beyond that. Right? They have no idea of him in the spiritual world. The conception is, what can he do for us? The four kinds of people that approach him, most in numbers, most common are the artha, the distressed, and the artharthi, one who seeks money. And these two categories often overlap. So, it's a recognition that there is the personality of Godhead, but it's a selfish, self-centered recognition. It's still not able to put him in the center. Instead of thinking that he is supreme and therefore I'm supposed to serve him, they think he's supreme, that means he can do a lot of things for me. So it's mostly we'll find that people approach him for this, for such reasons. Either Krishna himself directly, when we say Krishna, we mean all the Vishnu forms. Or even if they approach demigods, who are the representatives of Bhagavan, or the generally misunderstood, their position is misunderstood. They are often misunderstood to be independent gods. But people go, Kangshanta Karmanam Siddhim Yajanta Iha Devataha. People worship demigods for some akanksha. For some, that word comes in Tamil also? No. Yes. For some desire. I have this desire, you fulfill it. You can look up in the, just like you have the telephone directory. I guess those are getting a bit old-fashioned. You can look up in the demigod directory. I've got this desire. What should I? Which god should I worship? And which process? That's why you have to go to the Brahmins, and they'll tell you. You have this desire. You worship this god in this way, and you'll get this result. Ding, 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 ding. Press the button, and it comes out. Brahmins will mostly tell the most important thing in the whole process is to give dakshina to the Brahmins. So, Bhagavan, he is Hiranyanabha, golden navel. So this can be understood also that gold also represents all that is valuable, all that is attractive. So in this sense also, he can be said to be all, that his navel is gold. Generally the navel, we don't think much about it. It's head, arms, legs, but we don't think much about the navel. But every feature of Bhagavan is beautiful and important. So out of his navel comes the lotus in which the universe is manifest, in which Brahma is manifest. So even his navel has an important function. The next name is Sutapaha. Is also the name of the husband of Vrishni, who performed austerities for the sake of having Bhagavan as a son. This name literally means, Su means good or abundant, and Tapaha is a plural form of tapasya. So one who performs good or much tapasya, austerity. Now, Bhagavan, in one sense, he doesn't perform tapasya at all, because he's only enjoying. And tapasya means to voluntarily accept suffering. People voluntarily accept suffering. There is the process of tapasya, of specifically of performing austerities with the idea of gaining power or gaining some boons so that one can enjoy the world better in future. There are many examples in the Vedic literature. Hiranyakashipu is a prime one. His austerity was tremendous. And by performing such austerities, he gained power. He was stupid, though. In many ways, he's very intelligent in many ways, but he was very stupid in other ways also, because he thought that now I am invincible, I am the supreme power. But he didn't think that I had to perform tapasya to get power, and that means that there's some power greater than me. As Prahlad said, when Hiranyakashipu was frustrated by Prahlad, because Prahlad was just a little boy who had never performed any austerities. and who just defied Hiranyakashipu. He didn't stand up and challenge him to a fight or any such thing. He just didn't bother about him. He didn't care for Hiranyakashipu's might and his nastiness by which everyone else was afraid of him. Prahlad wasn't in the slightest bit afraid. And although Hiranyakashipu tried to kill Prahlad, he just didn't care, that's all. Wants to kill him? Okay. But then Bhagavan protected him. He wasn't afraid of Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, in frustration, asked Prahlad, "Where do you get your power?" And at this point, he admitted that he was defeated by Prahlad, that Prahlad was better than him, because he saw that Prahlad has got more power than me. But he didn't do anything. I went to such trouble to get all this power, and he didn't even do anything, and he's more powerful than me. And then Prahlad, who was intelligent, said, "The source of my power and the source of yours is the same." Which Hiranyakashipu, he couldn't relate to that, because I performed austerity to get power. You didn't. So how can it be the same? But the ultimate source is Vishnu. And the ultimate source of everything is Vishnu. And because Prahlad recognized that, therefore, he didn't even have to perform any tapasya. Just he recognized Vishnu. And Aradito yadi haris tapasat tatakim. Naradito yadi haris tapasat tatakim. This Narada Muni says that if you worship Hari, then there's no need to perform tapasya. And if you don't perform, if you don't worship Hari, then there's also no use to perform it, because what's the use of anything unless you worship Hari? So, materialistic people perform tapasya for the sake of gaining some power. And devotees may do also. Dhruv Maharaj, he performed severe tapasya for the sake of gaining power. But actually the real blessing he got came from chanting Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. There's no need for him to do all that austerity, actually. It was unnecessary, but because he thought, I have to get a greater kingdom than even that of Lord Brahma. So Narada said, okay, you want, okay, do some tapasya, you do it. But that was not necessary. Devotees may do also, not for the sake of I will get some power, and then by the power of my austerity, I will control my senses, and then I'll become a great devotee. This kind of attitude from the outset is non-devotional. But devotees, they may perform austerity in as much or to the extent that it is favorable for their advancement in devotional service. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. Tapasya can be accepted if it is conducive to our advancement in devotional service, and if it's not, it should be jettisoned, thrown out, to use a term that you'll probably understand. So, what is favorable and what is not favorable? We see that in previous times, devotees used to perform much austerity. Nowadays, not much. But that doesn't mean we should perform no austerity. It has to be some effort. We have to do something. We have to make some endeavor to control the mind and senses and engage them in Krishna's service. So, Krishna, he shows this. He, as Nara Narayana, he shows the path of austerity, for which is essential for human beings. Tapo divyam putrakayena sadvam shudhyad Yasmat Brahma Sokyam Tu Anantam. This Rishabdev said, he advised his sons that you should perform divine austerity. For the sake of attaining unlimited, the spiritual bliss which is unlimited. Otherwise, if we just engage in sense gratification, we get limited, hog-like sense gratification, which is quite different to the eternal, unlimited spiritual bliss. So tapasya in the minimal sense means simply to withdraw ourselves from sense gratification. I want to do something, I don't do it, because I know that doing so will entangle me in material suffering. Yehi sansparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteyana teshu ramate buddhaha. All suffering comes from the attempt to enjoy the senses, Krishna points out in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, an intelligent person doesn't take part in it. So, the minimal tapasya means to deny ourselves the sense gratification that our conditioned sense of egoism pushes us to enjoy. And on top of that, then we may accept voluntarily some difficulty. Now that's there in human life, just like some of you here, you're students. That means you're undergoing the tapasya of study. It means you don't like to do it, but you do it with the idea of in future, for the idea of your future. I have to study so I can get the degree, so I can get the job by which I can do more tapasya and get the money, and that's it. That's the ultimate aim of all this. And you might even get a taste for the study, just like people doing tapasya, they actually like to do that. You might get a taste for the study. I'm just speaking theoretically here. Although some people, they do. And some of the subjects might be even somewhat interesting. I must admit, even though I generally, when I speak of my own time in school, it seems to me like the worst period of this life that I can remember. But I have to admit, there were some things which were somewhat interesting. Some mathematics, some interesting things there. Even in chemistry and all this kind of thing. English, some things. I still don't remember running in eagerness to any of the classes, but some of the things were somewhat interesting. So people might get a taste for that. They actually like to do that. And similarly in devotional service, what is tapasya? It's not really tapasya at all. We see it as tapasya because we're addicted to sense gratification. Just like the idea that you have to rise by 4 o'clock in the morning. In the beginning, you might think, well, that's horrible. And then after you get accustomed to it, you think it's horrible not to. The idea of rising at 8 o'clock in the morning, which people think, well, that's horrible, I want to sleep till 11 o'clock. But devotees, the idea of, how can you sleep till 8 o'clock unless you're like seriously sick? How can you just sleep all night? What a terrible waste of time. You would feel very happy to rise early in the morning. And there may be some... that example of accepting austerity. So, yeah, people accept austerity with the aim of getting something. Like they'll go to work in Bombay in the local trains, not only extremely crowded in Japan, also the local trains. People go to work in the morning. In Japan, they have people who are hired. They have like a shield they hold, and that's for pushing people into the train. There's no space, but they just physically push people into the train. So somehow or other, they all get into the train. So it's suffering, but it is considered desirable. The result that I will get from it is considered desirable, ultimately. So in devotional service, that's also there. You may not want to go out in the heat for preaching, or in Russia, although it's still it's getting quite hot here. In India, in Russia, it's still very cold at this time of year. But devotees are still very cold, means the cold season is about 8 months of the year. And cold means something you can't imagine unless you've been there. It's so cold. In Russia, Canada, these still devotees, they go out. As the non-devotees go out to work, so the devotees go out to preach to them, to distribute books. That is a kind of tapasya. But that is accepted too for the sake of pleasing Krishna. So tapasya may be there in devotional service. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he sets the example of that as Naranara. Not that he's suffering. Tapasya means some kind of suffering or inconvenience accepted for future benefit. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he doesn't have to do anything or to gain anything. Namam karmani limpanti name karma pale spriha. He doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't have any desires that he needs to be fulfilled, because he is Atma Rama. He's fully satisfied in himself. He is apta karma. All his desires are fulfilled. But nevertheless, he performs tapasya for the sake of showing the example to others. So he may be called Sutapa. Srila Prabhupada, he often pointed out that one of the reasons we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is because he didn't perform any tapasya. He was, from the very beginning of his appearance in this world, he was supremely powerful, to the extent that a great witch called Putna, who came to kill Krishna, and she had the idea to kill Krishna, she was so powerful that even the demigods in the heavenly planets, they would be afraid to have anything to try to do anything to her. But Krishna very easily killed her. So the demigods, they attain their position by performing pious activities and tapasya, and they become very powerful. But they weren't powerful enough to overcome this demon, who must assume they must have also performed some austerities to attain that power. But Krishna, he didn't perform any austerities. As a child, he killed so many demons. So that's one of the symptoms of him being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he doesn't need to perform any austerities. But nevertheless, he does. As Rishabdev also, he performed austerities just to show others that this requires to be done. As Rama, he accepted life in the forest that was a curse given to him.
It's like a curse. Not exactly a curse, but there's the order given to him by Dasharath, by Kaikeyi, by Mantara.
So why go to the forest? Well, that's a banishment, so that the son of Kaikeyi, Bharat, could take the throne. And it's also a kind of spitefulness to inflict a difficult situation. But for Rama, he was very happy, actually. Forest is very nice. It has its own charm. The people who live in the city, they appreciate the sophisticated city life. The Kshatriyas, they have a very sophisticated life with all kinds of, the highest level of material civilization is enjoyed by the Kshatriyas, and to some extent by the Vaishyas also. They're wealthy. Kshatriyas and Vaishyas are wealthy. Brahmanas, they're not. Shudras, they're not. So they enjoy a high level of material sophistication, but there is a pleasure in simplicity also, which you can't have both of them. You can't have the sophisticated life, the pleasures of sophistication and the pleasures of simplicity. You can't have both of them. So in one way, the banishment of Rama gave him the opportunity to enjoy the pleasant life of the forest also. So it's an austerity, no doubt, especially for one who has enjoyed this city life. Of course, we always have to remember that Lord Rama is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that he is not a mundane person who's enjoying the city life, but he is, he's the Supreme Lord, and therefore sometimes we speak of him almost in mundane terms, because the mundane enjoyment is, after all, a perverse reflection of the enjoyment that he enjoys. So we always have to remember that. We find Srila Prabhupada in his Krishna book. He was narrating the pastimes of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And again he would use this term, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, just to help us remember that although Krishna, in many ways it might seem to us that Krishna is enjoying in the same way that we attempt to enjoy this world, but just to remind us that his enjoyment is of a different category altogether. He is the enjoyer. And our attempts at enjoyment are simply envious expressions of our inability to enjoy. We are simply meant to serve him, that's all. And our pleasure comes from serving him, not from being independent enjoyers. He is the enjoyer. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Sutapa, even his apparent austerity, for one thing, that's su, that's not ku, he's not a ku tapasvi, he's not a bad, what's the word in English for tapasya, austerities, what do you call a person who performs austerities, tapasvi, penance, ascetic, yeah, that's it, ascetic. He's not a bad ascetic like Hiranyakashipu. Everything he does is for the benefit of the world. Everything he does in this world is for the benefit of it. His main purpose is for his own enjoyment, but automatically as a byproduct, the world is benefited, because simply by hearing about him, we're benefited. In so many ways, he benefits the world. So he's not a bad tapasvi. Everything he does is for the good. Now, another meaning of the word tapa is knowledge. So in that way, this word, this name, sutapa, that is the quality of knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there are several names in Vishnu Sahasranam which describe Vishnu's quality of being all-knowing. Sarvagya is a well-known name, one who knows everything. And it also means there's a quotation from the Mahabharata which Shankara gives. Shankara that concentration of the mind and senses is the supreme tapasya. Or the word for concentration, ekagrata, which literally means that the focus of the eyes is on one point. One point. It literally means one. Ekagra means one point, and ekagrata means one-pointedness. So, Bhagavan, he is simultaneously conscious of and involved in everything that's going on everywhere at all times. So, he is bahushakahi anantascha. His attention is everywhere, but at the same time, he is vyavasayatmaka buddhi. His concentration is on one point. What is that one point? How his devotees can be satisfied. That is Bhagavan's concentration. So he's the supreme tapasvi. So thought, also knowledge, thought, these are all synonyms which can be derived from the term tapa. And there are many examples in Shastra how the power of tapasya is the most prominent power. As we see, the brahmanas, they get more power from tapasya than the kshatriyas do from all their training in fighting. That's why the Vishwamitra, he wanted to become a brahmana because he saw that from all my power as a kshatriya, I'm defeated by this skinny little rishi sitting in the forest. This Vashishta, he's just living in a simple forest life. He completely defeated me. So he wanted, because he was interested in power, he wanted to become a brahmana. But it took him a long time to become a brahmana, because a brahmana can be a brahmana because he's not interested in power. That's why kshatriyas can't become Brahman. They can't get the same power, because power is given more to those who are not interested in having it. Those who accept that I am not powerful, I'm simply a servant of the powerful, such persons can be trusted with power. Otherwise, if you give power to Hiranyakashipu, he'll just make a big mess. That's what Nrisimhadev called Brahma. After he said to Brahma, after Hiranyakashipu being killed, he said, don't give that kind of benediction again in future. He just politely warned him that don't do that again. You cause so much disturbance. Brahma is by Brahma's benediction after Hiranyakashipu's austerities that Hiranyakashipu became so powerful. So the next name, 198, is Padmanabha, which has already been given here in Vishnu Sahasranama at name 48. So 150 names later it comes again. So one of the names of Vishnu is Padmanabha, and another name is Padmanabha. Well, it means there may be different meanings of the name. Here it's given just after Hiranyanabha, Padmanabha. So that emphasizes the point of the lotus emanating from his navel that carries Brahma. Another meaning is who resides in the center of everyone's heart. That's by analysis, etymological analysis, that meaning is given. Because nabhi, it means the central point. So the central point of everyone's body is the heart. Not physically, it's not central, but it's the center of all energy in the body is the heart. So, one who lives in the Hridaya Kamala, the heart can be, is sometimes compared with a lotus. So, Bhagawan resides there. Another meaning has been given, that just like the flower, it blossoms, it attracts the bees toward it. So in the same way, Bhagawan attracts all the jivas, especially the pious jivas, toward him. The lotus is the most beautiful of all flowers, so Bhagawan is the most beautiful of all living beings. Another point, and you see, again, another of the qualities, that beauty is again described in another way in this name. So his beauty, by contemplating his beauty, one becomes elevated, one becomes free of material lust, whereas by contemplating the beauty of this world, one, in a materialistic way, if one contemplates the beauty of this world with the idea that let me enjoy that beauty, one becomes degraded, one's lust increases. But by meditating on the beauty of Krishna, we become freed from those base desires. Yet another meaning. Remember that Madhvacharya, he proposed to give 1,000 meanings of each 1,000 names. Another meaning is that Padma means knowledge. So one who is the center of knowledge, or one who controls and rules over knowledge, he's the center of knowledge, he's the center of everything. So knowledge means knowledge of that which exists, and everything rests upon him. He's the central point of existence. So real knowledge is to know Krishna. If you know many, many things, but you don't know Krishna, then you don't really know anything. But if you know Krishna, then you know everything. What is that? Yo mam eva samurho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarva bhavena bharata. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, one who knows me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without doubting, is the knower of everything, and thus he engages in my devotional service in all respects. O Bharata. Then name 199, Prajapatihi. This is already quoted. The Lord of all beings, including Brahma. Brahma is also sometimes called Prajapati, because from him, all other living, via him, all living beings are manifested in this world. He's the leader of all living beings. But the Pati, or the master of Prajapati, Brahma is Lord Vishnu. So I won't go into more detail in that, because that name has already come up. So, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there, unless there are any questions or comments about this. That's 199 names gone through. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. All right, so we'll finish there. There is a question. All right. Devotees of the Lord, they serve him humbly, yes. How can you think that I'm not serving? They're always lower than a blade of grass. So how can they think that they're not serving? Although they're serving him, how can they think that they're not? I don't really understand the question. Could someone make it more clear to me? Does anyone? Can you understand what's the point of the question? We're doing service. Why do we fall in Maya? Is that it? No? We are engaged in service, so how can we think that I'm not doing anything in humility? Is that the question? Well, because of humility. If we think that I'm independently doing, then we're immediately in Maya. If we think I'm doing something, but that we understand, that's only by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas that we're able to perform anything. And another thing we should consider is that actually I should be doing much more. So that is the natural quality of a devotee, is to consider that I'm very insignificant and I'm not doing anything. Even if you are doing something. Well, are you doing something? What are you doing? What's your main service these days? I see you in the kitchen quite a lot. You're cooking. So, can you cook? You say, yes, I'm doing it every day. But no, you can't do anything. Krishna gives the strength. Krishna gives the ability. If you think I'm doing independent, Krishna's dependent on me. All the devotees are independent on me. This is Maya. We can only do because Krishna gives the strength and the ability. Otherwise, we can't do anything. I've many times related an anecdote. Several years ago, in the winter in Baroda, I had a realization when I woke up one morning and I could move my body, but I couldn't move my right arm at all. It was completely stiff in the cold. I couldn't move it. You get up and you think, okay, I'll go and brush my teeth. You don't even think, you just do it. But I couldn't move it at all. It was completely stiff. Then I had the realization that, well, we take it for granted. I'm doing, but I can't even brush my teeth unless Krishna allows the bodily parts to move. So in one sense, it's not even humility. It's just to think I am not doing. It's not even humility. What we call humility is just an acceptance of the reality that we're totally dependent. That's all. Bit off subject, but anyway, we'll finish there now. Hare Krishna.